From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship at the Reeve Gauche and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain, or indeed a pirate, but a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one, and his family all came from Wales as well. For 30 years, I have been lucky enough to travel all over the world as a boring old marketing suit in the sports industry, which included having arguably the best job in the world as head of sponsorship at HSBC. Along that journey, I got to rub shoulders with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the world of sport. And having ditched the pinstripe suit for breeches and the red waistcoat and cutlass that befits a pirate captain, I set out to create this podcast where every fortnight I simply ask my special guests from the world of sport to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. Ahoy there, my hearties, and welcome back on board my pirate ship, the Reeve Gauche, and for another episode of the Captain's Table. It's been another exhausting couple of weeks for me since we all last met. Getting Seb Coe down to Australia and back again was one thing. How, though, I didn't die of starvation is some wonder. His dietary requirements were so strict, and frankly, he eats like a bird. The food was so boring. But I can see why he was such a fine athlete. He is as fit as a butcher's dog. John the Parrot has settled down now really well and finally got the rhythm of a maritime life. He is far less aggressive than his predecessor, and the singing is really coming along in both Welsh and English. The most joyous news is I will also be soon welcoming a new member to my floating menagerie. I'm getting a ship's dog, who is called Bruce. And he's born a couple of weeks ago in Wales, and he's a fine fox red Labrador, and who I think will be a great companion to me in the months to come, and certainly better company than a miserable wretch that is Paul, who remains the ship's steward by the skin of his teeth. If he wasn't able to serve the perfect Loch Lomond whiskey on the rocks, he'd been fired yonks ago. Anyway, we're back from Australia now and have sailed to Southport to pick up my latest guest, the English golfer, Tommy Fleetwood. Since turning pro in 2010, Tommy has been one of the most outstanding British golfers in recent times, with 8 professional wins, including back-to-back wins at the HSBC Abu Dhabi Championships, was a key member of Thomas Bjorn's 2018 Ryder Cup team, particularly with Francesco Molinari, and he managed second place at both the 2018 US Open and the Open Championship in 2019. I am very certain that more silverware awaits him in the years ahead. As someone who is myself rather follically challenged, I've always been just a little jealous of his flowing locks and the utter gentle charm that Tommy has. But I managed to swallow my pride and ask him to join me on board around the captain's table. And a very warm welcome to Tommy Fleetwood. Welcome to the captain's table. Pull up a chair and make yourself at home, mate.
Thank you very much, Captain. Yeah, will do. Don't mind if I do.
Well, it's great to have you on board. And obviously, the world's in a funny place at the moment. The narrative of you being on a captain's ship is a little bit of a stretch of the imagination because we're having to do this by telephone. But for all the listeners out there, just go along with the fun because...
what's normal these days?
What is normal? That's such a good thing. So first things first, Tommy, you're on my ship, the Reeve Gauche. We do have rum on board because this is a fierce fighting pirate ship, but
It's a classy one as you look around with the oak finish, the varnish, the lacquer, and we always take the high road on the Reeve Gauche. And so our drink of choice is Loch Lomond single malt whiskey as opposed to rum. So,
well, that'll go down just lovely.
Good lad. Well, I can offer it to you straight on the rocks or maybe mixed as an old fashioned or with soda.
Do you know what? On the rocks, please.
On the rocks. I'll just get Paul, my incompetent steward, to rustle that up and we'll get it over to you.
Incompetent steward.
Yeah. Well, I've got many, I promise you. So, Tommy Fleetwood, number 10, I think you are in the world. Is that right?
I am, yeah, as things stand.
As things stand, well, they may stand like that for a while. So, you might hold the record for the world's longest hold of the world number 10. So, Tommy, I'm not going to talk to you much about golf. I will a little bit later, but As a lad growing up in the northwest of England, what was your earliest sporting memory as a young boy, as a fan of sport?
I think even as a kid, my first memories are all golf. You know, for being from where I'm from in Southport, it is a golfing town. Prides itself on that. The Open always came to town every 8-10 years, And that's pretty much what I remember. I think I went to, so I'd have probably gone to the Open at Lytham, which would have been in 96. And Tom Lehman, when I'd have got on the train with my dad and gone to watch there and watch everybody. It was more practice days that my dad was always interested in. So I sort of began there getting a fascination with watching how players practiced rather than how they played. And that pretty much became a thing. 98, the Open was at Birkdale. So again, I mean, that was just a walk, really. Could walk there and go and watch the golfers, which it was my favourite sport. And I always enjoyed watching it, and I got to be pretty close to it because of where I was from. So always looking back, like, my first memories always involve golf.
And was your dad a good golfer? I mean, was he a golf nut as well? So
He was all right. He got down to a 4 handicap at one stage, so he's pretty good. But he always had like a deft touch around the greens. He always had a really good short game. And and I quickly sort of became competitive with him, but he was always far more interested in my golf than he was of his own.
But do you attribute your love of golf as a fan of golf, not just as a great golfer as you've become, to your dad?
I would say so. Yeah, I mean, that was the reason I started playing, try and play with him or my brother and keep up with those guys. But I, you know, the hours that I spent with my dad, whether watching golf or talking about golf or playing golf, I would definitely, that was the start for me.
Oh, amazing. And the young Tommy Fleetwood, presumably you didn't have the long flowing locks that you do now. You probably had a more sensible boy haircut rather than the thing that you wear now.
I went for a very short look for most of my child life, yeah.
Did you play football or did you play rugby league up there? Or what were your games?
Yeah, well, the school sport was football, really. Like, if you wanted to be in a team, I wanted to play in the football team. I was an Everton fan from a young age, simply because pretty much in Southport you either pick Liverpool or Everton, and yeah, I just picked Everton. I'm glad I did. I wouldn't change it now. And then rugby league, again, that was sort of early memories. Again, my dad is a big influence on the rugby league side, really, because he was a Wigan fan. And when I was younger, I would be watching a Wigan team that had like Andy Farrell, Chris Radlinski, Brian Carney, those kind of guys playing. And Wigan were great at that time. So I enjoyed watching the rugby league and sitting there and supporting a team with my dad. So they were my sports. And then school, I would always try and get involved in whatever sport was going on. I can honestly say I was distinctly average at pretty much every other sport, and not great with a moving ball. Cricket, I was never...
Did you follow Lancashire? Were you a fan of cricket, even if you weren't much cop at it?
Not as big as my dad. So again, my dad would sit and watch cricket. I mean, my dad would watch Test cricket and sit there for the 8 hours a day and just sit there and watch. And I've never been able to do that. But always sort of kept an eye on how Lancashire were doing, just being the county and stuff. But I remember one school match I played for the school cricket team, and my dad came to watch and then gave me a bollocking afterwards because I wasn't knocking a slow bowler for six. And that was pretty much the end of my cricket career.
Oh, Dad, he's done some good as well. He got you. He probably got you into the right sport.
Yeah, it's worked out okay.
Did you go to Central Park and Goodison and places as well? Were you able to go and be a young fan and see the live experience as well?
Not much, actually. And pretty much the reason for that was that with any spare time that I had, I wanted to play golf. And, you know, so whether it was a weekend where I'd finish school and I'd have the whole of Saturday or Sunday, I wanted to actually go to the golf course and play golf or hit balls. And, you know, on an evening time, I'd come home. If I had any homework, I probably didn't do it. And then I would, I'd, you know, go and hit some balls. And it was just always the way it was, really. And it was never a forced thing. It was just that, like, literally any, like, I wanted to do it. And it was always my favourite thing to do. So that was just how it worked out.
And who were your... Obviously, golf's been a massive part of your life as a fan and as a player, and you talked about rugby league and football. Who were your earliest sporting heroes? Who do you remember? Who was on the... What posters were on your wall? Who were your gods?
Golfing-wise, so I always grew up... So I'm one of the, you know, the guys that grew up in the era when Tiger started sort of becoming Tiger Woods and that, but he was never really my hero. My hero was Ernie Els. Ernie Els and Colin Montgomery were my two, like, golfing idols when I was growing up. I was, again, growing up at a time when Duncan Ferguson was playing for Everton, so he was always a standout, really. Just for Duncan
Big
was
dunk,
more like
yeah.
sheer passion and, like, you know, epitomised Everton Football Club really at the time. And even to this day, I don't recall a better moment than when we beat Chelsea in his first game in charge, just when we scored that goal. So just something about, there's always like the odd person that comes along that has an aura around him for a certain club, and he was that for Everton. And Ernie Els, again, when I went to a couple of tournaments, I had a chance to meet him a couple of times. And again, growing up, people say, you know, there's that horrible saying when people say never meet your heroes, and Ernie has never gone along with that statement. He's always been amazing, from being an 8-year-old kid when I met him to playing with him on tour.
It is amazing. As you know, Rory McIlroy came on the show a few weeks ago, and his idol as well was obviously Tiger, same sort of that kind of era. And what's interesting is that for you both, is that you grow up and you've made it onto the big time on the golf tour, and then you get to play golf with the guys who 10, 15 years before were your heroes. Do you remember the first time you played, say, with Ernie, who's a poor lad, he's played with me, and I don't think he's recovered, actually. Do you remember going, I can't believe it, I'm playing with Ernie Els, even though you'd earned your right to be there?
Do you know what? It's actually a strange feeling when you go from, when you're actually playing, so like you'll get a draw, and you know, I've played with Tiger, say, and I remember playing with him for the first time, and Ernie playing with him for the first time, or Monty, say, and you get... when you get drawn with these guys, but because you are so involved in what you're doing, you kind of just move along with what the situation is, and it doesn't really strike you that much. Like, it's great, but because you're in your own bubble and golf is such a selfish sport, you know you pay very little attention to what the moment is. And I'd say the thing, there's one or two moments in particular where I've been off a golf course and, say, had gone to a function or a dinner and sat with Ernie. And those times are more where I've had pinch me moments, really, with him. And when you're playing and when you're actually competing in your sport, you literally do take it in your stride and you kind of go along with it and maybe think about it afterwards. But the moments that you can get sort of outside the game when you're not really self-focused are, for me anyway, they've been much more special.
Yeah, he's a big unit as well. I remember sitting next to him at a dinner once at I think the World Match Play or something. The first time we'd met, and we're both quite tall, big fellas, as you know. But I pinched a chip from his plate and he gave me a look, which I'll never forget. I thought he was going to thump me.
Hey, did you see the picture of him with the two guys? So at the Nedbank last year when South Africa had won the Rugby World Cup, did you see the picture of him with two of the guys? He looked like a little boy.
He did. I did see that picture. No.
Which was like, everybody from the golf world was like, this is a joke, surely.
Tell me, so forget golf for the moment. We'll come back to that. What's your favourite sports stadium as a fan, just as a pure fan that you've been to that you go, I love it here?
Oh, now that's a good question. Well, I would say Goodison for sentimental values, and the atmosphere when I've been has been, that's like a small sort of older stadium, and of course it's close to my heart, and I would say it's very difficult to beat the atmosphere there. I've been to Anfield, Old Trafford, very special. And one thing I would love to do is when we're away and we travel so much, I would love to go to sort of stadiums that are, you know, overseas and stuff. And I never, you know, I really never get the chance. And that's something that, like, looking forward, I'd really like to do, really.
And you can probably change that and just organise your practice schedule if there are matches or games going on, say, in the States or wherever it may be.
Well, exactly. That would be a good way of doing it, really. So,
and do you like it? I think I know the answer to this, what you just said, but if you're watching sport, do you like being at home with your feet up, or do you like going to the pub with friends, or do you like the stadium experience, or does it depend?
I like it all.
Yeah. It's cool.
It depends what mood you're in, I suppose. I mean, there's something very comforting and very homely about sitting at home and watching sport on TV. And I think it comes from when we travel so much. Like, I would relate, like, a really homely feeling to be sat on the couch with my feet up watching sport from my couch, kind of thing. And I think that is, you know, one of them times where I feel most satisfied, almost.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Do you, when was the last time you cried watching sport? Not your own game, but a performance. Do you ever cry? Have you ever wept tears when England have been knocked out of a World Cup or whatever? Is that, are you that emotional about it?
No, I'm more likely to have tears of joy than tears when it's gone badly, really. I don't cry from disappointments, but you know, hopefully, and we haven't really, England football or anything like that, I haven't had many moments that have caused me to have tears of joy either. So,
no.
Tears are off the either end of the spectrum is quite covered. So, but when would I have last cried? It's a very good question, actually. I don't really cry much watching sport.
How about movies? Are you sentimental on a movie?
Yeah, movies. To be fair, do you know when I actually do? I've had it two or three times when I've got pretty emotional. It's on the Thursday night Clap for Carers. I get very proud to be British at those those moments and stuff. I agree.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
About stuff like that.
And from the sublime to the ridiculous, if you're at, say, Goodison or Old Trafford or doesn't matter where. And I know, you know, you keep yourself in good nick these days. You've got a sort of Adonis-like body, I've no doubt.
But absolutely.
We're going to sports stadium. What's your choice of half-time food from one of the vans round the back? What is it, a burger? Is it a steak slice?
It's always a pie.
And what filling?
Meat and potato would be my first choice. But, you know, sometimes you have to go for the balti or a curry one.
That's obviously a Lancashire thing. I asked Jason Robinson, a Wigan great, and he said meat and potato pie was his as well. So you're obviously brothers from...
There's only one choice. If you can have a top choice, that should be the only choice in a pie.
Right, well, I'm going to ask you a couple of golf questions because I have to, and it's important. Loch Lomond, as you probably know, Loch Lomond Whiskies are the spirit of the Open Golf Championship. They're a big supporter of your game. And you've played at the Open. I think you came second last year, didn't you? Is that right?
I did.
Yeah. So what's been your favourite moment as Open moment, either as actually a fan, as that young boy talking in on the amazing Northwest Golf Coast you have there, or as a player?
I've had some beautiful moments for sure. I think the first tee at Royal Birkdale in 2017 was unbelievably special every time I walked onto that tee, in particular the first round, just for home support and that feeling of teeing off at a home open was kind of like from starting the game there to actually playing an open there, and that was very special.
Yeah.
I think... And probably the back nine on Saturday of the Open last year, when it was, Shane played such a huge part in what was an amazing atmosphere. But just when I was playing really well and I was having a go at it myself on a Saturday afternoon, I think just that whole experience where I felt really in control, but the atmosphere was amazing. And I was sort of trying to pull away and keep up with Shane, and we were the two that were pulling away. I think that was, something I always look back on I can think that was really, really cool, that bat nine on a Saturday.
Amazing. And have you, other than the golfers we talked about earlier, have you ever played golf with any of your sporting heroes?
Sporting heroes, other than... not really. I've met a few, but actually playing golf with them, no, and I'd be very, very open to it. I think, I've played...
Well, you've played with me.
I play regularly, apart from Giles Morgan. I play with Giles Morgan. I play regularly with Pep Guardiola, and I would say he's not a hero. He's a close friend and somebody I respect very much. And I love people that you can learn from. And I think golf is an amazing, because you're out there for 4 hours. I think it's an amazing time to actually do that. But sometimes it's awkward, you know, when you're playing golf with someone, and obviously you're in like a pro-am and you're kind of relaxed, but a lot of the time the guys actually are like really concentrating on the game. And then you think, well, they're kind of getting away from their sports. Do I really want to ask them questions? Because maybe they just want to relax and stuff, and I never know what's the right thing to do.
It's difficult, isn't it? Do you have a sort of dream pro-am team that you could be captain of golfers, non-golfers, anybody, actors? I know that Jack Nicklaus always asks his son, says answers with his sons, but do you have a four ball that you'd love to captain?
I always say that answer when asked about a dream four ball. I always say it'd always be my family, my sons and my dad. It'll always stay that way. Those will always be the first people I want to play with. And other than that, I think there's a lot of anybody that is successful or anybody that is inspirational, I would love just the chance to get to spend the time with. And I think golf is an amazing way to do that.
Do you imagine what you would have been had you not been a golfer?
I don't think about it too much. At school, I've given this answer a bunch of times, but when I was leaving high school, I didn't go to college or university or anything like that. I left high school at 16, and I decided I was going to play full-time golf for 2 years and see how I got on. And I had a bit of funding from the English Golf Union because I was playing for England at the time. But the only other thing I would have done was I considered going to drama school for college. That would have been my 2 years of if something else had I taken it up.
Tommy Fleetwood stars in Top Gun. Who knew? Who knew?
I probably wouldn't have got that far looking back on.
Well, they'd have made you cut your hair at the academy. You know that. And tell me, Tommy, what's an event you talked about earlier that you'd love to go to, more stadium stuff? What event have you not been to that's on your bucket list? Is there one event in the world anywhere that you just love to go once?
Well, I would have loved to have gone to... So we had tickets. We were in Japan last year when we were in the semi-finals of the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup, and the way the event went, the weather called our tournament off, and we had to play all day on the Saturday, and we didn't get a chance to go, which was really gutting. I would, if England... I only want to go to like a final of a World Cup if England are there. Like, I'm not too fussed about watching it if any other countries are in it. And... I think I've been to Wimbledon and I've been to the US Open in tennis at a nighttime game, which was always on my bucket list. So any of the other two Grand Slams I would really enjoy going to. I would like those occasions. I'd say those are the
pretty good ones. Yeah, very good. We now come to the part of the show which I call the Captain's Broadside, where I'm going to ask you a series of some relatively quick-fire questions. It's got not much to do with anything other than me being a nosy Parker.
But that was the best kind of question.
So you've come across my beautiful boat, the Reef Gauche, and we are now free to set sail wherever your heart desires.
It's special, these moments.
Yeah, it'll be a very special... Think of it as a cruise with your old mate Gilo. It'll be fun. But where would we go to? Where's your chosen destination? Where's your destination that I can take you to? Because it's a boat.
Mallorca, please.
Oh, that's a good quick sail too. We can get there relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And because it's first night on board, we got around this beautiful oak table. I'm going to feed you, but you get to choose the menu. Paul, the steward, despite his incompetence, has got some good chefs around. So what is the Tommy Fleetwood three-course meal? And I'll give you cheese. I chuck it in for free.
Three courses.
Cheese I'll take care of as a gift.
Well, amazing. So I'll have Heinz tomato soup, please.
Great, that's excellent. Yeah. And do you put anything, a bit of cheese on that, a bit of cream, or just as is?
I mean, however you want, but as long as it's Heinz tomato soup, don't go too silly with it. You don't need to ruin what's already pure. but you know, you can add a bit of pepper if you like.
Yeah.
Christmas dinner.
So turkey, all the bits and pieces.
Turkey, all the bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Or you can say roast dinner, but just make sure it's turkey.
Yeah.
And dessert. It's probably going to be a key lime pie.
Very good. Well, I'll get Paul to sort that out. That's very straight.
Thank you, Paul.
He's a good. He's all right. He's just... Oh. Yeah, you will after the meal, I hope. And also, because you're my special guest, you get the beautiful cabin with an ensuite shower, if that's possible.
Yeah.
What song does Tommy Fleetwood sing in the shower?
What song? It can be multiple, actually. So, you know, if, you know, I can do a good range for many of Frank Sinatra's classics to modern day R&B. If you know, so right now I am actually feeling kind of soothing with the water and everything, and
yeah.
I think the whiskey's hitting me, so I think it's probably if you went for some Frank Sinatra, that'll just hit the tone right now.
Have you got a good voice?
No,
really. I mean,
Frank Sinatra did.
He did. So you just go along with him.
I go along with it, and especially if it's in the shower, and everybody loves a tryer anyway. So
well, God loves a tryer. That is true. And what was your first album or CD that you bought as a kid? Do you remember?
Oh God, now you're asking. I actually don't remember what my first album was.
What sort of bands were you into?
I was never a rocker, although people think I look like that. I was always into, well, I was always in as a kid into more sort of chart music, poppy music, so anything that was current at the time. And as I've grown up, I've gone a little bit more sort of R&B and current, but I actually love music. My wife loves music, so it helps, you know, that we like it together.
And do you remember what your first concert that you ever went to was?
My first concert?
Yeah.
I actually feel like, did I even go to a Spice Girls concert? it was like one of them school parties. I guarantee it would have been something like that. I'm trying to remember now because I know it would have been in that era, but I actually can't remember, but it would have been something stupid like them at the time.
And what was your first car that you ever got? And what was it?
My first car was a Fiat Punto.
Secondhand, colour?
Black, always black.
How long did you have it for?
A good few years, actually. And it did, you know, it was a strong cookie, actually. It went through a few bumps, that car. I wasn't the best at like parking and stuff growing up, so I've had to ease my way into that.
So you were given, you got yourself a cheap secondhand car and eased yourself. What do you drive now? You've got probably not the same car.
No, I don't know where that one is, but I'm BMW X5 now, which is
perfect for the family.
I'm all about comfort, really, when it comes to driving. I'm not like a fancy car person. If it's a nice, comfortable drive and it gets me from A to B very like quietly, and I feel in a good place when I've got out of the car, then that's what I want.
That'll do you. And do you have a hidden talent at all? Nothing to do with golf or sport. Is there just something that you're good at that the world doesn't know about you? Look, anything?
Nothing particularly special. After a few whiskeys, I would tell you I'm a great dancer, but I know that's not true before the few whiskeys.
Are you any good at table tennis or snooker or pool?
Oh, you know, I'm dreadful at those sports. Again, so like golfers are normally good at these kind of things, but I think, you know, I've always been distinctly average at any other sport, and in particular snooker, I'm very, very poor at.
Oh, at last, there might be a sport I can beat Tommy Fleetwood at, because it's furious.
Without doubt, there's multiple sports that you can beat Tommy Fleetwood at.
Oh. Well, and the final question I have is not a living thing, but if you could smuggle because it's a pirate ship, obviously.
Yes, of course.
If we could smuggle your most treasured possession on board and then bury it in Mallorca somewhere safely for you, is there something that you've won or got or in your possession that you would never let go of?
More than likely. I have a mold of my son's hand and feet, and I would probably, that would be a very prized possession. Anything to do with like sort of pictures of family or anything like that, I think would be my most, I'm very, very unmaterialistic. So nothing in that sense, but anything that has sentimental value, I would pick something like that.
Well, we'll take those with us and we'll put them in the strongest chest that we've got. We've got a few.
So don't drop them while we've had a few whiskeys. That's all.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, we'll get you another whiskey on the way. Look, Tommy, I've taken a lot of your time. You need to unpack. You need to get yourself ready for the enormous meal that Paul is preparing. You do need a shower, and we look forward to the Sinatra singing as well. Tommy Fleetwood, thank you so much for coming on board the Captain's Table. It's been a real joy.
Dylan, thank you very much.
Gosh, just lovely to have Tommy on board. He is just the most humble of sports stars and such a good example for youngsters of how to wear your fame so lightly. And I am so with him on both Heinz tomato soup and Christmas dinner. Good choices. For all our listeners, we are so grateful for your support of the show, and we don't want you to leave with your drinks cabinet bare and empty. And so our kind friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies are very kindly once again giving away a bottle of 12-year-old single malt whisky, which is simply divine, particularly the peated version, Inchmoan, which warms the cockles of your hearts as the days begin to shorten. To be in with a chance of winning this bottle, head over to their Twitter page at Loch Lomond Malts and follow the instructions to enter. Coming up on the next show, and to help me train my new ship's dog, Bruce, we are joined by BBC Sports commentator, Mr. Andrew Cotter. If you're a resident of the UK and a fan of sport, you will know his voice, if not his face. Andrew has been the voice of BBC Sport for well over a decade. Rugby, golf, Olympics, Wimbledon, athletics, you name it, he is the voice behind the action. And in the past 6 months or so, he has also become somewhat of an internet and social media sensation, as his two Labrador dogs, Olive and Mabel, have become stars of both social media during lockdown, with Andrew providing commentary of their exploits, deeds, and adventures. Such is their fame, Andrew now even has a book deal with them. So from all my colleagues at Are You Not Entertained and Loch Lomond Whiskies, thank you for your support for the shows we make. We are so grateful for your time. And if you get a chance, please tell your friends about us and get them to find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pod fix by searching Are You Not Entertained. If you want to follow me personally or get in touch, you can do so on Twitter at GilesMorgan71 or via email at giles@gilesdmorgan.com. So until we meet again with Mr. Andrew Cotter, remember to scrub your poop deck, sluice your gunnels, and always keep your powder dry. Goodbye.